Who's that mobster who died from syphilis? Who has syphilis?
A lot of them did, but yeah, I think you're referring to Al Capone.
I am referring to Al Capone specifically. Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, it's another Geeky Boners episode. We're raging hard on a variety of subjects, including Fringe, Darth Vader, and a new book.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
As always, I am Tim Wick.
And Nick Glover.
That's me. I'm that one.
And today it's a Geeky Boner episode.
Boing,
boing, boing, boing, plonk, funk, thwap,
that's
meat.
Splat.
Meaty sounds. So we've got raging tumescent boners for things that are geeky this week, as always.
Yep.
We always
in rage.
Yeah, we always have boners. We are often in boners.
Hulk boner smash!
but you'd think that Tim is giving you clues about his boner, but he's not.
I'm not.
He's just that excited. We're excited about a lot of things, but I think we should start off with Nick.
Okay.
Yeah, Nick. Yeah.
So,
talk about your boner. I haven't seen it. I've seen it plenty, but you know,
for the
discerning listeners and Timmy's at home.
Right. I bought the first two hardcover. Well, first, preface this. I've got a Comixology Unlimited account. It's like a $6 a month add-on for Amazon. Kind of like Marvel's old Unlimited plan. You get to read digital comics, download them, whatever. And it's not a huge library, but things come and go, kind of like Netflix for comics. The first thing I did was hit up the Marvel Star Wars comics, and they're great. But I got to the Darth Vader one, and after I got through all the free Darth Vader comics, I immediately hopped on Amazon and bought the first two hardcovers, which because the hardcovers are like $20 each, but each one contains like three trades of comics.
That's a good deal.
And
a trade's usually like 10 or 12
the trades
bucks.
Are like $15.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's a super like no-brainer buy the hardcovers for Darth Vader. But yeah, the Star Wars comics are excellent. The Darth Vader comics are fucking amazing. And I just finished the second hardcover. I loaned the first one to Tim to check out.
You did, and I'm halfway through it already.
Nice.
Yeah, so they
do you have a chub?
A bit of a chub.
So they all take place between New Hope and Empire.
Oh, okay.
And so it's Vader, like, as the Emperor's dog, like, as his, you know, number one guy. Mm-hmm. And the...
Except he's not...
Not quite
I
yet.
I mean, yeah.
He's like, one of the Emperor's top five dudes. But the Emperor's kind of putting him against other people in that, like, Sith Lord kind of testier.
Which among us loves us best? You know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
abusive parent making their children fight against each other. One of the best things that happens in this comic, without giving too much away, is Darth Vader's hunt to figure out who the pilot was that blew up the Death Star turns into him figuring out that it was Luke Skywalker.
A
boy named Skywalker.
Which is relevant to Darth Vader's interests.
Right. Yes, because no one but the Emperor knows that he's...
And Obi-Wan,
right.
Because does Obi-Wan know he's Darth Vader? Or does Obi-Wan just...
In New Hope, they make it obvious that he recognizes him.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I haven't sketched it. Yeah, I just haven't seen it in a while.
So as soon as he figures out that his son is alive, Darth Vader, his entire plan of motion for the Emperor changes, and he starts hiring this other character, Dr. Aphra, she's great. She's like an evil Han Solo kind of character. Or less moral Han Solo character.
Yeah.
And he starts hiring her to subvert the Emperor and to work for Darth Vader rather than the Empire. So he's positioning things to bring Luke under his wing and usurp the Emperor.
Mm.
And so much, it fits some belter so shit. Well between these two, between New Hope and Empire, because now I want to go back and watch Empire again, because when he confronts Luke in Cloud City and they have their big fight and, you know, I'm your father.
It's impossible.
Come with me and we will rule the galaxy as Emperor, as, you know, father and son. All that shit, like, fits so great with the comic.
Nice.
There's some good, a little bit of good Boba Fett, like a lot of good Bounty Hunter stuff. It's written by Kieran Gillen.
That's really cool.
Who is Wicked and Divine, a lot of really other great comics. He's fantastic. And the Salvador La Roca does all the art. And there are panels where they draw Darth Vader, who is, you know, an expressionless black suit. And he doesn't have a lot of dialogue because he's Darth Vader. But the few times they, like, focus on him for a panel and give him, like, one or two words, the art really strongly conveys how lethal Darth Vader is and how serious he is. And sometimes, like, it'll show him just remembering, and then they'll do, like, a couple of panels of flashback of him murdering people on Tatooine or something. Jeez. And it's like, it really, really carries a lot of emotional weight.
That's awesome.
I really am enjoying it. I'd highly recommend them.
You can give more of a fuck about Darth Vader than you ever did in the prequels. That's for sure.
No doubt.
And it actually I don't want to say it improves the prequels, but because it does do some flashbacks to things that happen in the prequels, it does give more emotional weight to even those moments because it seems to understand the character better than I think the prequels ever did.
I agree. It uses the material in the prequels to, like, build upon and make something better for the character. There's even a moment where when he realizes that Luke has been on Tatooine this whole time.
Yeah.
When he goes down there to investigate Ben and Beru, not Ben, but Owen and Beru's little smoked ruin. He's like, motherfucker, like, last place I would have looked.
Yeah.
Like, God damn it.
He would have known that I would never come back to Tatooine, because fuck Tatooine. Yeah. Like,
and, like, when Vader goes back to Tatooine, like, it's like he begrudges having to go back, but the only thing that would have made him go back is...
That's great.
To find his...
That sounds really good.
Kids are alive or not. Yeah, it's amazing.
I was, someone shared it's from an old Star Wars RPG book, like from the 80s or whatever, but it was like, you know, like RPG books have those little funny things in them sometimes, but it was like a little bill that was, I guess, in some book that was like, what Han Solo owes Jabba the Hutt.
Oh.
And like broken down, like itemized line by line as to like what he owes him. So it was like the original debt, the interest on the debt, like the cost of hiring all the bounty hunters, specifically Boba Fett's like per diems and things like that. Yeah. Like the cost of like replacing someone. Like it was like this, like it was super great. And if you look, you're like, oh, if he had just paid that original whatever money, like he wouldn't. It was super. It was. I just made me think of that. They're like,
One of the things in the Star Wars comic that's just titled Star Wars, which is mostly about Luke and but a lot about Leia and the rebellion as well. Luke goes back to Tatooine and goes to Ben's hovel, his little hermit shack.
Yeah.
And he finds the journal of Obi-Wan Kenobi to try to, cause he doesn't have a master. He doesn't know about Yoda yet at this point. Like, so he's trying to figure out how to become a Jedi, and he finds Ben Kenobi's journals. And so what they've done is, like, the back few pages of every issue of Star Wars was a little, like, a vignette about Obi-Wan on Tatooine trying to lay low, but completely unable to lay low because he's a meddlesome Jedi.
Right.
And so there's, like, one or two times when he saves Luke's life without Luke knowing and is, you know...
That's great.
Jedi mind-tricking gang members extorting moisture farmers for their water and stuff like
that's
that.
That's super,
like,
cool.
And so those stories are in the Star Wars comic, but together, those pages come together to make, like, a whole story.
Awesome.
Which is in those pages. And, like, yeah, read them free digitally for as much as you can, but, like, buying them in the hardcover, because there's so many little side stories and one-offs, they collect them all in the hardcovers. really well.
And, well, is it free or is it a $6 subscription?
It's I think you can get like the first few issues free.
Oh, first taste is free.
First taste,
yeah.
Is free.
All right. Also, like, don't feel bad about buying it on Amazon because who are you screwing? Disney? Oh no! Yeah. Oh no! They'll be so hurt by Amazon deep discounting.
But if you have like a friendly local comic book shop, I'm sure they'd appreciate your patronage as well.
Absolutely.
Sure. Friendly local comic book.
That's
shop.
That's a great boner.
Yeah.
It's a really good one.
It's
solid. I think that we can I wanna hear more about other boners. I have a boner thirst.
I have
a thirst for boners. I'm
the
boner curious.
Biography.
Yeah, I'm boner curious. Actually, I was pretty boner curious in high school. It got me in a little bit of trouble. Tim, tell me about your boner this week.
All right, my boner. We are right now in the middle of the Minnesota Fringe Festival. That's kind of my boner around this time of year. All three of us are in shows that you may have already checked
it's
out.
True.
I don't know, or, you know, you're not in Minnesota and you don't care. But what I really like about Fringe, aside from doing shows, and there's one show that I've written that I'm basically like a stagehand and I have a little cameo part in, and then another show where I'm actually performing and I play the devil, which is weird. But anyway,
well, it seems right to me.
Yeah, it seems normal,
I suppose. But what I enjoy about Fringe even more than doing the shows, and I love doing the shows, is just, I mean, you guys know, we all have so much going on in our lives. And mm-hmm. the nice thing is during Fringe, you've got these shows and you're kind of committed to it. And you've got the artist pass. And so I just get to go see a whole lot of theater.
Yeah. And you can just say to people like, it's Fringe, I can't. And people usually understand, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're going to shows all night.
Yep.
I've reached the point where I could probably go see in every slot a show either by or featuring a friend of mine. And
yeah.
I have reached a point where I can't actually make that happen, you know, because if there's, you know, there are other producers that I'm like, well, they may not be friends, but I really like their show, so mm-hmm. I want to go check it out. And mm-hmm. sometimes, and I do miss shows that friends of mine are doing, which sucks, but at the same time, I love being able to hang out with all my theater friends in one place at the end of the night, because at the end of the night, there's Fringe Central and a mm-hmm. lot of people, they get done watching their shows and they go over to Fringe Central and they hang out for a couple hours and they drink and they talk about what they saw.
It's the place to be when things like the encores are announced or stuff like that. It's super fun.
They do like a trivia contest at some point, which is all Fringe trivia, and it's all really obscure and
stupid. Yeah,
yeah. I don't know why anybody knows it.
It's kind of circle jerky.
It is, but it's fun anyway.
Yeah.
Because these are Fringe nerds. These are people that just, and some, there are a few audience members that show up at Fringe Central, which I think is cool because, you know, you can talk to the audience members about what they liked, which can help inform what you're going to be able to do.
Tell
better.
Them why their Fringe review was wrong.
Well, that's really important.
Just throw a drink in their face.
Yeah, yeah. If they're like their, your one-star review, you can be like, you, fuck you.
Yeah.
You owe me a drink for what you did to my rating.
So what's the show that you're in?
The show I'm in is called Katie versus the Devils, written by friend of the show, John Olson.
Hey.
As we might remember, John is a theist and actually a Lutheran, was studying to be a Lutheran minister mm-hmm. at some point.
He was
point,
either like the first or second theist we had on the show.
Yeah.
Like him and Jenna.
I think Jenna was the first. Yeah. Yep.
And the play is about Katie Luther, the wife of Martin Luther, the mm-hmm. father of the Lutheran Church, and a night where she faces three devils.
Does she get nailed?
I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, exciting.
But it's really steeped in Lutheran theology, and so it's a weird show for me to be in as a non-believer, but it's a good show, it's a challenging role, and I'm excited to do a challenging part because I don't
exciting.
Act as much as I write. So, and then the show I wrote is Death in Yosemite, an adaptation of the nonfiction book, which I describe as a combination of Our Town and a slasher film. So it's basically stories of stupid people dying in Yosemite National Park.
Cool.
Like a sprinkling of the Darwin Awards in there.
And these are all true stories. They're based on I adapted stories from the book into a loose narrative structure.
Nice. Mm-hmm. That sounds really exciting, actually.
So why don't we talk about, though, you two both have shows.
Yeah.
Ali, what are you doing?
I am in Waiting for Gygax, which is a friend of the show, Kyle Decker. He wrote it with Jacob Gulliver, and Kyle is also directing it. I'm in the show with Kamara Bashar, who is a bunch of people from Human Combat Chess. Then Matt Sachs and Andy Gullickson, who are like longtime Fringe people. But it is Waiting for Godot, retold as more of a comedy and set in the D&D universe. So I play a lich named Vladimir. Estragon is a monster beast. And then Lucky and Potso are two humans who are adventuring. And we are, Estragon and I are waiting for Gygax instead of waiting for Godot. And we have heard tales. We're waiting in a dungeon with a trap waiting for him to try to take him down. We're going to kill him. And then we will have all the glory. And if you've seen Waiting for Godot, it is very long and very boring. So it's like 3 hours. Waiting for Gygax is a fast 56 minutes.
It's a fringe show.
So. It's a fringe show, but also it's very funny, but it's very true to the source material. There are lines that are exactly from the original. It's really great. I think it's going to really satisfy that Venn diagram of theater nerds and gaming nerds. I think are really going to like it. My old stage director from St. Kate's is like, he plays role-playing games like almost every night of the week and is still the stage manager, director, you know, theater tech, you know, professor at St. Kate's. So he's super into it. It's I'm excited.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
What about you, Nick?
I'm in The Summoning, which is written by Megan Slauson, directed by Eric Thompson.
Friend of the show.
Yep. It's basically like your typical like Ouija board horror movie, except it's demons that accidentally summon a human.
Okay,
they summon like a basic white girl, right?
Yeah, they summon a girl with like Starbucks Frappuccino cups and like a yoga mat and stuff. and so they summon a human to their demon world, it's comedy. There's a few like darkish spots which are pretty great. I'm excited for it.
You're a little. It's funny because you're playing kind of opposite your usual. You're playing a sensitive mama's boy artist demon, right?
Yeah, like,
yeah. So he's really excited to be.
It's a little outside. It's not something I've acted as. Before.
You're not typecast, that's for sure.
Yeah, this time. Yeah, it's. It's fun. I still get to be the butt of some jokes, which I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're at the Southern Theater.
Oh yeah, we're at the Rarig. We're at the Rarig Experimental.
Rarig X. Yeah, where's I'm at Katie? The TRP for Death in Yosemite, and Katie is at the Rarig Arena.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Which is a theater I hate.
We'll probably see each other then.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah. No, I fully intend to see both of your shows, and certainly they're in close proximity to both of mine.
Yeah, so. That'll make it easier to see Katie for me, for sure.
I've seen a lot of shows at the Southern. I'm excited to be in a show at the Southern.
Southern is a fun theater. Yeah.
Southern's a great
Despite
theater.
Despite the problems with the male restroom.
Oh, are there problems with the male restroom?
It's like soaked in urine top to bottom every time I've been in there.
Oh, no.
Yeah, people basically pee everywhere except the urinal.
Yeah.
It's not my experience in a women's bathroom. Yeah. Like, there may be smells in a women's bathroom, but they're not usually urine-soaked problems.
It's like an old building that has some humidity problems.
Yeah.
And then, like, the bathroom doesn't have an air current going through it.
Sure.
So it really is just like a piss sauna.
That theater is super cool, like, temperature-wise, because it's so big
like
and airy.
Yeah,
that was nice.
Yeah, the Southern is a really nice theater. And TRP, this is the first time I've done a show at TRP.
Yeah.
It's a really nice theater in the round, I should say.
Yeah.
It's a really nice space. One of the best round theaters I've ever been in. And
that's where Caucasian Aggressive Pandas was last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They really used the space well.
Yeah, that's great. Do you feel like Katie uses... Have you guys...
Well, it's not Katie. It's Yosemite.
Yosemite is there.
I wrote it for a round.
Awesome.
I wrote it.
That's
with,
exciting.
With a round theater in mind.
Yeah, that's
so.
Where. That's also where the show that I wrote a piece for, The Abortion Chronicles.
Yeah.
That
yes.
was in the round.
Yeah.
In the TRP last year too, and they did a good job with that as well.
Yeah,
that's
they're gonna be actors climbing all over the audience.
Oh, that's so fun there.
It's gonna be just. Awesome. Really big physical.
I'm really excited to see Tom Reed's one man show Stranger Things, where he's going back to his doing like a spoof of a TV show, and he's doing it for Stranger Things. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about Couple Fight. I'm excited to
Third
see
year, Couple Fight?
Yeah, Couple Fight 3. It's always a good time. I've heard about there's the Meet Cute rom-com musical. That sounds really good too. That's
sure.
the people who did the Gilligan's Island musical.
Okay.
God, yeah, there's just a lot that looks really interesting.
The show that I'm going to recommend to anybody who does Fringe, or if you go to Fringes, there's a group called The Fourth Wall. They do a show called Fruit Flies Like a Banana.
Yeah. Are they doing it again?
They are going to be there. They're going to be a TRP. And what they are is they're musicians and dancers. So they do music, often original compositions, that they play music and they choreograph to it as well.
That's awesome.
And it is the thing that I always describe is like that you need to see this show is like last year they did a show which was an alphabet show where you'd pick a letter and then they had a little musical number that was based on that letter. The letter P was palindrome.
Huh.
And it was a musical piece that was a palindrome, exactly same beginning to end. And there was a choreographed piece that went with it that was exactly the same
That's
from beginning
awesome.
To end.
That's really cool.
So they play the song and they do this choreography and halfway through, they're unwinding the choreography in the same way.
That sounds
really
good.
Freaking amazing. Just go see it.
Yeah.
What's your boner moment?
Oh, my boner.
What?
Well, so when we were at Convergence, friend of the show, Cargill, came up to us and was like, I have a present for you guys. It's the last ARC advanced reader copy of my new book, Sea of Rust, that he'd signed for us. Yeah. And he signed it hilariously. It's like, dear Glovers, like, fuck you guys, love Cargill. And then the next page is, no, seriously though, fuck you guys. And the next page is like, what the fuck? Fuck you guys. Go read the book. And then like, seriously, more? Fuck you guys. Like, it's really funny, but.
Read the fucking book already.
Yeah. The book is fucking great. I cannot recommend it enough. I don't want to get you into it because I don't want to spoil it for either of you two because I think you would both love it.
It's also an advanced reader copy. So.
Yeah. It should be coming out, I know, later this year. It is a sci-fi dystopian novel in a world where humans are gone. There's just robots left, and it goes from there. And your protagonist is a bot. It is. So great. It has so many amazing moments. I think it would make an incredible movie. I honestly like couldn't. It's so wonderful. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Honestly, guys, like go pre-order it because you will not be disappointed.
What's the name of it again?
Sea of Rust is the name of it.
Sea of Rust.
S-E-A of Rust.
It's coming out, I think Cargill said September.
Yeah, it should be September. Yeah. And it's, so you can pre-order it now and it'll just get delivered to you. Yeah.
So every time I've talked to you about it or anytime I was listening to Cargill talk about it, it seemed like there was quite a bit of, I can't really answer that. Because
yeah.
It'll take away from your experience
yes.
as a reader.
Yes, very much.
And so it sounds like there's a lot going for the book that you really can't go into detail about without jeopardizing something.
That's exactly it. It is so, he has done, I'm trying to think of how I can say this carefully without spoiling anything. He has built this incredible world and world history. So it is, it's our world. And then built upon that going forward as if like, you know, it was a future. It's, you know, some years in the future. I won't say how many, but like it's super great. And all of these, it's told in like, Cargo's got a great writing style, not to like jerk him off too much, but I just really like the way he writes.
Don't
and
worry,
so,
he's not listening.
Just the way that it like divides itself up and it'll flash back to something. Parts of it almost feel like an encyclopedia entry and that it's like, oh, the way this happened, you know, this and everything. And it's just, it's really a little bit, but not, I mean, it's got some funny moments, but it's not a funny book.
Well, I mean, but in terms
but
of
yeah.
like style where
yeah.
a narrator will just take an aside.
Kind of. You can't really, and you're not really sure if it's a new different narrator, if it's just your protagonist narrating about what happened, but it's really great, and I think you guys should honestly pick it up. I can't imagine anybody not liking it,
except dumb people.
Yeah, Nazis probably don't like it.
Probably.
Yeah. Nazis. Yeah. I bet.
If you talk to a Nazi who doesn't like the book, you can punch him in the face.
Exactly. We've covered
that Nazi.
So it's time to go to five questions.
Five
we have
questions.
We have described our boners top to bottom, girth, length, and width. So I think that we can move on to these five questions, which we have five questions from listener Nathan Heavenstone.
Hey.
Hi,
and
Nathan's
written in before, and he says that these answers won't be as sad as his answers to the last five questions, and he's sorry about that. So here we go.
Why is he sorry that they won't be sad?
I think he's sorry about the fact that they were sad before because they were very depressing.
Oh,
I don't remember. I think
okay.
there was a dead dog in there somewhere. There was some. I remember
yeah.
Nathan's questions had his answers had some little bit of sadness. I don't remember them exactly.
Question one is: what conspiracy theory do you find the most interesting or compelling?
Flat Earth, not because I find it compelling, and I don't actually find the idea itself fascinating in that sense, but I'm fascinated by the fact that somehow in 2017, there are still people who actually believe this. Like, what? How? Why? What is happening that we live in the 21st century and there are still people who believe this? We figured this one out thousands of years ago. This should not still be a thing.
But, and I think that the fascinating thing about flat earthers is that creationists think they're dumb.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like...
I posted a video. We should post it on this. Honestly, there was a video of from the Jim Jefferies show. He got like six conspiracy theorists in a room together, and they all believe different things.
Like an alien guy, and 9/11
truther. A flat earther, the Illuminati guy was like, there's websites about them. It's obvious they're real. And like, they were all giving the flat earther guy shit. And then there was a Holocaust denier. And like, it was just so great to see someone who had just asserted the earth was flat to look at the Holocaust denier and be like, that's bullshit, man. Like, you're crazy. Like, it's great. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, question number two. What is your perfect two-week vacation? Money is no object, but physics is a limiting factor.
No schedule. For 2 weeks, I go to bed whenever I want, wake up whenever I want, eat whenever and whatever I want, and I basically just don't care where I am. I just want to do what I do when I want to do it, and then I do it. I fucking hate schedules, and I only follow them because I have to. Short of that, I'd love to do a tea and sushi tour of Japan because I'm obsessed with Japanese green tea and sushi.
The idea of 2 weeks of unscheduled time to me is horrifying. You
know?
It's like, that would bore the fuck out of me. I totally respect it in others. But
the first 3 days of that are great.
Yeah, oh, I could.
And then after that, it's like...
An unscheduled structure. Weekend?
Yeah.
An unscheduled weekend? I'd be down with that.
Right.
But an unscheduled 2 weeks, mm-hmm. I'd be like...
How about this? Your first unscheduled weekend in October? Like, that's awesome.
That feels good.
That's great.
Yeah.
But after the first 2 days, I would start scheduling shit.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Question three. What's a movie or book that changed your life and how or why?
Harry Potter books. I'm going to try to keep this short, but getting into the fandom of Harry Potter actually indirectly took me on my journey to atheism, which led me to feminism, intersectionality, and my current left-wing activism. So,
oh my God, the conservative Christians were right.
So, I started reading Harry Potter when I was 11, the same year Sorcerer's Stone was released in the U.S. When the fourth book came out, I found the Harry Potter Forum Chamber of Secrets, part of the MuggleNet website. I got heavy into two things there, one of which I partially regret. The one I partially regret is that I got deep into the shipping wars. I wanted Harry and Hermione to get together. Obviously, that didn't happen. The other thing, though, on this site was a section where we could debate politics and current events. I, for some reason, jumped into the religious debates. At the time, I believed in God. But this is actually where I was introduced to the idea of atheism as well as fanaticism. Oh. And going down that rabbit hole is how I ended up losing my faith. And all the SJW stuff followed. That's a really good answer.
That is a good answer. I feel like losing your faith implies that you're going to find it. I've always wondered. I mean, it's the phrase we all use. But
yeah.
To me,
I think you can find it.
Find your virginity.
No. I think you can find it because, like, I was just thinking about this today. I was singing along with a new Muse song that has faith in it a lot. And I was like, man, this could be, seen as religious, but I don't think it is because, like, I have faith in stuff.
Sure.
I have faith in people. I have faith in my marriage. I have faith in some of my friends, not all of them. I think that you can lose your faith in God to find your faith somewhere else. Sure.
You can. Yeah. I don't know.
I get what you're saying, though. Yeah.
All right. Question number four. What is the geekiest thing you have ever done or said?
I once went on a really long, overly detailed rant about the difference between FLAC lossless compression and MP3 lossy compression and why FLAC is superior. I'd say people fell asleep halfway through, but I was actually hanging out with fellow audio enthusiasts, so it was a fun conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Flack. Right?
Yeah.
I spelled them out just because I wasn't sure, but FLAC and MP3.
I'm not an audiophile. I'm not an audio nerd, but I'm a computer nerd, so I see a lot of that, like... You know where those overlap, boy. I'm telling you, man. Don't judge me, but I can't tell the difference between like a 64K or 64 whatever MP3 and like a 128 or 192.
Nick, you're the worst.
I married him anyway.
Lost on me. Yeah. Question five. What's your favorite hangover cure?
I don't have one because despite enjoying alcohol, I've never been hungover. Oh. I did black out once when I was 20. I'm almost 30 now, though I didn't get a hangover even then. It's mostly because when I drink, I largely stick to one type of alcohol. Like if I'm drinking scotch, that's all I'm drinking. And if I've drunk enough to be tipsy, I also drink water, take vitamin C, and eat bread before going to sleep. The closest I ever got was when I polished off a bottle of orange Moscato in a day a few months ago. Oof. I woke up the next morning with a mild headache, but two Advil, a glass of water, and 10 minutes later, the headache was gone and I felt fine. I also don't really like being drunk to begin with. Tipsy's fine, but out of control is not an option, which also helps. The blackout and the wine were the only times I've ever crossed that line, and I do not plan to cross it again.
So, I mean, there is a hangover cure in there, though.
Yeah, there is.
It's like drinking water,
drink vitamin C, eating bread before you go to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Nathan,
so
we got you.
I'm yanking out the hangover cure.
Yeah, exactly.
From that, I don't have a hangover cure.
All right.
If I ever have a lot to drink, and that is unlikely, I will drink water and take vitamin C and eat bread before I go to bed.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Nathan. If you want to answer our five questions, send in your answers to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. You can find our five questions if you are just now a new listener and you didn't really catch all that. They're posted on our website. You guys like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. If you want to be a Patreon supporter, please do that and support us. We love that. We got a lot of great people. We're still working on getting one of those special episodes out with Fringe and then RenFest, and then it'll be October. And by then, hopefully, there'll be more time slots for this spooky ghost tours.
Yeah.
So our idea is that we're probably going to go late October. So we'll get those out as soon as we can. Thank you for your continued support, despite us not being able to get this together with the hilarious ghost tours people.
Hey, we got more button supplies. So,
yeah.
We got a few new folks we need to send some buttons and stickers to. We'll have those remade soon.
Yep, we'll get those out to you. Thank you guys. If you want to talk about something of the Between Fringe Festival and the Darth Vader comic, and maybe you got an ARC of Cargill's book, I don't know. But if anything sounds good to you, please let us know on Facebook. We love hearing from you guys. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
Bye. Bye.
I find your lack of boner disturbing.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks. Authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks, geeks without God.
Viva Lustinger!